not what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Do not have sexual relations for that
constitute
woman.
Constitute an axis of evil.
You still want to see us fall backwards.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's all things political, and we got a lot of politics this week and next week as well. The Republican National Convention will officially start today, although the big business won't start tomorrow because of the hurricane. We'll have three guests with us during the course of this hour and welcoming your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Joining us by phone from Tampa, Florida, Adam Smith, political editor of the Tampa Bay Times, named the best political writer in Florida by Washington Post and one of the country's top 10 political reporters. He has been with the Times since 92 and has covered local and state government, and he is with us the first part of this show. Later on, we'll speak with Rich Galen, Republican strategist and columnist, who was press secretary to Dan Quayle, and the last part of the show, John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. Adam Smith, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, unfortunately, the story over the weekend at least became the weather in Tampa. Have things settled down a little bit, and are the Republicans upset that they have to start this officially? Really, they're starting it today, but big business not until tomorrow?
Yeah, today was going to be a sort of an off day anyway. There wasn't most of the main event for later on. But, you know, here it's a little windy. It's cooler than normal, but it's perfectly fine weather. Obviously, everybody's keeping their eyes on the New Orleans area, because if it hits there and does a lot of damage, that could still affect things later this week.
Was everybody able to get in town all right? Are the airports and everything open today?
Yeah, I think everything's pretty much fine today here.
Good. When you look historically at this convention, does this ticket, the philosophy of this ticket, remind you of any Republican conventions in our memories?
You know, I don't know about the philosophy of this ticket, but I think, you know, a lot of people make the comparison to 1980, where, you know, Jimmy Carter was sort of viewed as a lot of people were unhappy with the way things were going. But they weren't sold on Ronald Reagan, and it took a while. The conventions, and particularly the one debate, where they sort of got a level of comfort, and then it turned into a landslide.
What do you think Republicans hope to accomplish over the next 3 days, 4 days?
I think it's very much to sort of really introduce Mitt Romney. There, you know, it's some of us forget how many people there are who really are not paying close attention, and it's just sort of, you know, humanize the guy and let people know that he's not the sort of vulture capitalist, cold-hearted guy that the Obama campaign ads have been portraying him as.
It's hard to believe from our perspective that there are people who aren't paying close attention, isn't it, Adam?
I know. It is very hard to believe. But there really are, and there are often, you know, it's a fairly small, maybe 7% of the voters who are undecided, and those tend to be people that are living normal lives and not paying a great deal of potentially the daily ins and outs on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. Jeb Bush said in the last couple of days that the Republicans really need to stay on the economic message, and all of these other issues are big distractions for them and may indeed hurt them in November. Do you see them moving much more toward an economic message, an economic message, again and again, really pounding that theme?
I think Jeb's point of view is they need to, instead of just saying Barack Obama's been a failure, they need to offer some concrete solutions and alternatives. And I think in a way, Romney has been talking an economic message throughout the campaign. In a way, picking Paul Ryan doesn't help that, because now it's more and more focused on entitlements, et cetera, which is not really the same on script for the economy.
How do the Republicans plan to deal with the abortion issue?
Well, they've got a platform that I think most people don't care about. Democrats would like people to pay attention to it, that says abortion should be illegal even in cases of rape and incest. And I think if you're the Romney campaign, that's the last thing you want to be talking about is abortion. You want to be talking about the economy.
So this will be something that will be voted on at a time when it won't draw a lot of attention?
You know, there will be stories about it, but, you know, nobody really pays a great deal of attention to the platform. I mean, you will certainly have Debbie Wasserman Schultz and a lot of Democrats calling attention to some of the positions that, you know, may improve Obama's already advantage among women. But I don't think that's going to be a defining issue here.
Mm-hmm. Our paper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, had an interesting piece yesterday about the cheeseheads who are attending, Ryan Walker and Priebus, who really are playing a huge role in this Republican convention. Do you have any thoughts about that, why the cheeseheads seem to be dominating, or would you agree that they're dominating in some ways?
Well, I have not seen any of those goofy cheese hats yet, but I'm sure we're going to see them soon enough.
Yes.
But, you know, you've got the chairman of the Republican Party, who's a high-profile guy. You've got the vice presidential nominee. So it's logical Wisconsin's going to have an outsized influence. And now I think a lot of us didn't expect Wisconsin to be a real toss-up battleground state, and it looks like it may be.
Mm-hmm. And what about Paul Ryan? What are you sensing from his campaign swings in the state of Florida? How's he playing?
Well, he came to Florida in his first rollout. He went to a very, very Republican area, one of the strongest Republican strongholds, a place called the Villages, which is just a big, ginormous retirement community, but overwhelmingly Republican. So I think he came there to try to make the point that, you know, his views on, you know, privatizing Social Security or dramatically restructuring Medicare are not necessarily poison to all seniors. So he went to a very Republican area, and he was greeted very well.
And nationally, your sense of how he is performing?
And nationally, there's no question he's fired up a lot of the base. I think some people wondered, did the base really need firing up that much, considering there's so much. People may not be that enthusiastic about Mitt Romney, some of the conservative base, but they're very enthusiastic about beating Barack Obama. But he's clearly energized the base here. You can feel it among all the delegates and activists that are in Tampa Bay this week. And I think it's sort of one of the big questions remains to be seen what he does for swing voters, what he does with seniors.
Let's welcome some phone calls. We want to take as many as we can this hour, and each guest is on for a limited time. Adam Smith, political editor for the Tampa Bay Times, is our first guest this hour for all things political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Jim in Milwaukee, our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to just say that the abortion issue may not affect more than a few percentage of points of votes, but that's what counts, and that... I think Democrats just have to keep pounding on the whole concept that these people are not to be trusted, that they live in an etch-a-sketch world where they say one thing but mean another. And, you know, with the we've talked about in the Republican platform, you know, they're against stem cell research, which affects people with Parkinson's disease, and they're against certain types of oral contraceptives. And Blunt came out with an amendment where he was trying to allow employers to not allow certain health benefits for moral reasons. And so, you know, in the process, they're seeking to revise with bogus alibis to prevent their political demise with women and men who can think. But when they vote for the platform, they say aye, and ultimately they can't hide their lying eyes.
You want to comment on that, Adam?
You do not sound like a swing voter. But no, I think, you know, certainly the Democrats got a big assist from Todd Akin with his, you know, absurd remarks. And I think you're going to see, you know, Romney really does have so far a problem with women compared to Obama. So you're going to see the Democrats try to capitalize on that and hammer home some of the Supreme Court repercussions and certainly some of the abortion positions. But I still think most people believe this comes down to the economy.
The problem with women appears to be significant, and you have to believe that the Republicans are on this in strategy sessions in a big way. How will they address that gap?
Well, again, it's the economy. There's a briefing I just got an email about, you know, about how women have been affected by this economy, and there's some statistics that show unemployment has been women have been harder hit. So, you know, I think ultimately it tends to be the social issues play a more prominent role when things are going well. And when things are not going well, which is we're still in some tough times, they tend to be less front-burner issues.
Adam, who are the Republicans presenting as their keynote speakers this week? Who's front and center?
Chris Christie is the keynote speaker, and I'm sure he'll give a big stem winder and fire everybody up. Here in Florida, a lot of us were thinking that Marco Rubio, the senator, would be a potential keynote speaker. He's going to be introducing Romney on Thursday. But those are the two. You know, some people are wondering who will fire up the crowd more, Christie or Rubio. I think clearly, if you have a keynote address, it gives you more of an opportunity to really fire up the crowd than if you're the introducer who really is mostly touting the nominee.
And our governor is speaking tomorrow night, Governor Walker.
And he's speaking tomorrow night. And there's a lot of enthusiasm. They sort of energized by what happened with the recall. So he's going to be probably greeted as something of a hero, too.
Brett in Baraboo. Hi.
Hi. Regarding Congressman Aiken and his comments about legitimate rape, I mean, Ryan and others have condemned those while supporting Aiken's bill to make rape victims have the child. How is that really playing among women and people who want to protect rape victims?
Well, clearly the Democrats have tried to link, Paul Ryan was a co-sponsor of a bill that used the term forcible rape, although that term was later taken out. Mitt Romney has made a point, and Paul Ryan also opposes abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. That's not Romney's position, though. So again, it's going to be one of these issues that the Democrats will try to talk about as much as possible, and the Romney campaign will try to talk about as little as they can.
Will either of the Bush presidents be at the convention?
Neither of the Bush presidents will be at the convention. Jeb Bush will be here, and his sons will be here. But H.W. is his health's not all that great, and I think George W. has decided he keeps lower profile, give a little space to Romney.
Will there be other absences, noticeable absences?
Let's see. I don't. Dick Cheney's not coming. Which I'm probably the organizers here are pleased with. And, several Gulf Coast governors are going to take a pass because it's a little unseemly to be heading down to the big giant party when there's a potential hurricane coming.
Mm-hmm. And the organizers would be pleased with Cheney not coming for what reason?
It's usually a convention is a time to pivot away and sort of really reach out to the overall general election electorate and your swing voters. Cheney is obviously a very polarizing person that is not necessarily help you expand your electorate.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I know you're on the move here today. Tell me how important these conventions are now. I can remember the days when we stayed up and watched them for hours at a time on ABC, NBC, and CBS. Will people indeed be paying attention to this, or is it just mostly for the party faithful now?
It's a commercial, and I think those actual acceptance speeches have gotten astronomical ratings. Last time they got huge ratings, both for McCain and Obama and Sarah Palin. But it's a lot of people are questioning whether really a 4-day convention is necessary. You could really do it in 1 day or two. But they're really not any. There's no surprises typically, but. It's still a chance for people to actually see both parties and both nominees give their vision and their methods and put their best foot forward. So they're important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Adam.
Thanks.
Adam Smith, political editor of the Tampa Bay Times, who's out and about covering the official start of the Republican National Convention, although everything, as you probably know by now, doesn't really start until tomorrow because of the hurricane. We continue our conversation. We'll speak with a Republican strategist and columnist who is press secretary to Dan Quayle. He's done a lot of things. Rich Galen will join us, and we'll welcome more of your phone calls. This is All Things Political on the Ideas Network. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave a comment, there is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rich Galen joining us now. He's been described as what you get when you cross a political hack with a philosopher. He has done all kinds of things in his life. He did a tour of duty in Iraq in 2003. He went at the request of the White House, and that assignment stretched into 6 months. He was responsible for bringing the message of the positive aspects of what the coalition was doing in Iraq back to America. He's been press secretary to Dan Quayle when the former vice president was a congressman and a U.S. senator, and to Newt Gingrich when Gingrich was House Republican whip. And he became in 1996 the communications director of the political office of Speaker Gingrich. Since March of 98, he assumed the position of executive director of GOPAC. He has written a three-day-a-week political column. He is a frequent guest on a lot of major television shows, and he is with us now. And we'll be taking your phone calls. Stay with us. We're just going to chat with him for a little while, and then we'll be with your phone calls. Rich, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it happens. I'm in the same hotel as the Wisconsin delegation to the Republican National Committee, so I've seen a lot of old friends already.
Have you seen cheeseheads or not?
No, I don't think they're wearing those yet, but we'll see what happens when they, you know, if they wear them out in the rain, we'll see what happens.
Well, as long as you brought up Wisconsin, let's talk just a little bit about Wisconsin. I'm wondering, we have three very prominent people who are going to be speaking. The chair of the RNC is from Wisconsin, the vice presidential candidate, Governor Walker, is speaking there. Is there some reason Wisconsin is being given such prominence? Is there something that happened here that's unique that the Republican Party nationally would like to emulate?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you had that recall election, and it didn't go well for the Democrats and the labor unions. I think a lot of people on the Republican side took great deal of solace in that. That if that had gone the other way, I think this might be a completely different atmosphere politically. And you know, you have the vice presidential candidate, so that counts. And you know, you've also, I mean, you didn't mention it, but you've got a Senate race there. That looks like it could be a game changer, as well, with Tommy Thompson on the ballot. You know, driving Republican votes, very popular guy. So yeah, I mean, Wisconsin, you know, could really it could be one of those tipping point states that 3-4 months ago people might not have thought about, but now they are.
Mm-hmm. Polls are showing, if you believe these polls, that this race is really, really close. What is it that the Republicans need to do this week to pull them ahead?
Well, I think what they need to do is do, you know, what conventions are designed to do, which is to capture the imagination of people, both the converted. People say, well, you know, they're already voting for your guy. Well, they might be favoring your guy, Republican or Democrat, depending upon who they are. But the conventions are really the first shot across the bow for the ground, what we call the ground gate, the turnout operations. Because having somebody who supports you not vote is essentially the same as a vote for the other guy. So these things are really designed to do two things. One, to present typically the presidential candidates, but also the vice presidential candidates, in a light that will appeal to the groups that the parties are aiming at, and help people who might be undecided make up their minds in favor of, depends on which way you're going, either the Republican candidate or the Democratic candidate. So it's a big deal. I was listening to the previous discussion, and it is true that you can do this in 3 days, maybe 2 days. And it's not generally known that the federal government this year will underwrite these conventions, these two major conventions, to the tune of $18 million apiece, which is not going to happen again. Somebody realized in Washington they weren't awash in a sea of money looking for places to spend it. And so I think that's a good thing.
Who in the world is undecided at this point, Rich?
Oh, a lot of people are. I mean, you know, these things, you know, we even in what we call landslide elections, the vote differences are generally very small at the presidential level. So if, in fact, 5 to 8% of people are either undecided or persuadable, they might be leaning one way, but you can, you know, either side might be able to persuade them back to undecided and then come their way. You know, that's a ton of people. That's, you know, that's could, you know, 8% of 160 million is a big number.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our lines, I want to weave our callers in. Brian in Lake Villa, Illinois, had a comment on your comment about the money being spent at conventions. Brian, hi.
Hi. Aside from the 18 and $250,000 going to each of the parties. There's also $50 million that Congress set aside for security.
Right.
That's another $100 million in taxpayer money that's going to support parties.
No, I absolutely agree that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think taxpayer monies should be used for even for primary elections. I mean, for a lot of states, if you are an independent, you can't vote, and spending taxpayer money on a purely partisan activity, I think, is wrong. I couldn't agree more.
Thanks, Brian, for the call. And speaking of money, if you live in the state of Wisconsin, we are just flooded with commercials. I can't believe how many commercials there are. Are you concerned about the amount of money being spent in the presidential race? Do you think that it's good for the country to have this, bad for the country? And will it result in people tuning all of this out because they're being bombarded?
Well, nobody knows the answer. We'll know the answer to that on November 7th. But the I'm not one of those who thinks that this money just sort of disappears. I mean, it goes to radio, television stations. It goes to, newspapers. It goes to magazines. I mean, they hire people. It's the money gets churned. I mean, if I were Wisconsin and I had the level of activity on my radio and TV stations, I'd say, come, bring it on. That's great. We need the money. So I think from that standpoint, it's fine. And because at the presidential level, again, they're fairly evenly matched. In fact, I believe the number is somewhere close to $100 million that Obama has outspent Romney so far this campaign season in some of those battleground states. So if you think you've been awash in a sea of ads prior to this, just wait until Romney turns on his tap and you see the level of, you're not going to be able to watch a baseball game without getting 18 commercials at least.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Let's talk about the candidate for a moment, Mitt Romney. What is it that he needs to do, and what message is it that he needs to really focus on to reach those people who don't know who they're going to vote for yet? Is it the economy, and does he need to focus more on the economy?
Well, I think he has been focusing on the economy, and it is the economy. There's a new Washington Post poll that was released this morning that shows overwhelmingly that's the number one issue on everybody's, not everybody's mind, but a huge proportion of potential voters' minds. And all the other things are really secondary or tertiary. So what the Romney campaign wants to do is to make this a referendum on the first on the last 3.5 years. And what the Obama campaign wants to do is to make make Romney an unacceptable choice, and that's why I think you see the tone and tenor of this campaign. My sense is that most people have made up their minds, as you said, about both of these. But the issue that even my Democratic friends fear that the growth potential in terms of support is all on Romney's side, because people have decided whether or not they think President Obama is suitable for a second term, but they're not sure yet whether Romney's the guy. So that's really what he's got to do.
Mm-hmm. We spent a little bit of time talking about the gender gap. Another issue that Republicans have made front and center, of course, is health care. I'd like for you to respond to the GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney interview yesterday with Chris Wallace, in which he really takes on both of those issues. Let's listen.
Well, first of all, with regards to women's health care, look, I'm the guy that was able to get health care for all of the women and men in my state. They're just talking about it at the federal level. We actually did something, and we did it without cutting Medicare and without raising taxes, number one. Number two.
So you're saying look at Romneycare?
Well, I'm very proud of what we did and the fact that we helped women and men and children in our state. Number two, and we did it without cutting Medicare, which obviously affects a lot of women.
What do you think of his response to that?
He's right. It's this is this is a very wealthy country, in spite of our huge deficits. I mean, we're still the wealthiest country on the planet, and a wealthy country like ours should be able to provide health care, I think, to all of its citizens. The issue, as it always comes down to, is how do you do that? Where does the money come from? What are the outcomes? One of the differences, I think, between liberals and conservatives. And I use those as points on a continuum, not as pejoratives. Is that liberals tend to measure programs in terms of how much money is spent on those, and conservatives tend to measure programs on the outcomes. So let's use education as an example. If you can adopt charter schools and increase the outcomes for the children that attend those schools, at the same or lesser cost, that's a good thing. If your goal is to hire more teachers, then it's a bad thing, but it doesn't necessarily affect the outcome for the students.
Is health care an issue that will play for Mitt Romney, or does he face problems here because, from what some are saying, the plan in Massachusetts was really designed, the national plan, the Obama plan, was designed by the same people?
Well, it happens. I mean, Hawaii had a plan also some years ago. The issue is again, does it scale up properly? And the Hawaii plan simply did not. We don't know about the Massachusetts plan because we have a different plan now. But it's not. I'm a card carrying member of the Medicare Society. I'm 65 years old. I am the poster child for this. But what irritates me is being told that I'm like Fredo Corleone, that I'm too dumb to understand this process, and somehow I'm going to be frightened every time somebody mentions the word Medicare. I understand it. I get it. And there's a reason I think that that Romney still leads and will continue to lead among older voters is because we've been through a lot. We understand this stuff.
Hmm. Let's spend a moment talking about foreign policy. You were in Iraq, and you were charged with coming back to this country and talking about the positive aspects of what the coalition was doing. We're hearing horrendous news from Afghanistan pretty much on a daily basis. Will Mitt Romney talk about this issue in his acceptance speech? Will it be a focus of the convention this week? Should it be a focus of the convention? And do you see clear differences between Republicans and Democrats on particularly the Middle East, but also broader foreign policy?
I think in the Middle East there's a clear difference in terms of at least the intensity, if not the level of support for Israel between the two parties. Republicans tend to be more supportive, I think, of the notion of protecting Israel. The answer, the broader answer, though, is if there were a good answer to Afghanistan, somebody would have thought of it sometime in the last 2,500 years. It is a very difficult place to be. It is a very difficult country to be in. And the Afghans are, you know, some of the toughest people on the planet, and they'll just wait you out because they've been through this, you know, since Genghis Khan. They know that sooner or later the Americans are going to go home. The issue for, I think, the country, and again, I don't have a good answer for this, nobody does, is whether or not the Taliban will turn Afghanistan back into band camp for terrorists, and how do we protect against that? So these are such complex issues. I mean, people say, why don't we do something about Syria? Well, because then you get Turkey involved, and you get Iran involved, and Russia involved. I mean, these are terribly complex issues, and I don't know what's going to be in Governor Romney's speech, but I think both sides understand that these foreign powers, Egypt, another good example, are going to be watching very closely both of these conventions and looking for any twitch that they either think is going against them or going for them. And I think both sides want to be careful not to cause a reaction unwittingly by focusing too closely or coming out too demonstrably either for or against.
Phone number 800-486-8655. Dave in Eau Claire, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. You know, I think this attempt by President Obama to take everything away from the economy and put it onto things like abortion absolutely will not work. The electorate is just too smart for that, where they realize that entitlement reform and fixing our economy are the two biggest things. But one thing I think President Obama isn't thinking about is what will happen if he does get on. If we get into the debate about abortion, his vote when he was a state senator, a present, I mean, that's the best he could muster up. An objection to partial birth abortion, which is an absolutely barbaric procedure. If anyone wants to, everyone, all of your listeners should look up on the internet and see what that procedure is. I mean, an infant's head is punctured and its contents are vacuumed out. I mean, just imagine if pro-life groups start putting ads about that. That'll quickly turn on President Obama, and he will be viewed as the radical, not Governor Romney, who is pro-life, but not against the abortion in cases of rape or when a mother's life is at risk.
Rich.
Well, the thing about abortion is everybody over the age of, 13 and a half has made up their mind one way or the other, very few persuadable people. The issue is whether or not, I suspect your caller was one of them, whether or not it is the issue on which people's vote will turn, and studies indicate that it's not a very high proportion of the population that it's an issue that people understand. They've made up their minds, but in terms of whether or not that is the issue on which a vote will or won't be cast is a relatively small proportion of the voting public.
How concerning should it be to Republicans that they lost time with the Todd Akin controversy and abortion became front and center for a few days? Was that damaging?
No, I don't think so, because everybody did exactly what, in my opinion, was the right thing to do. They all, you know, called. They immediately called for Akin to get out of that race, and I'm still not convinced he won't get out of the race. But the
really, you think he might?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know one way or the other, but if he can't raise any money, then I think he may see the wisdom in backing away. And I mean, the Senate could turn, the control of the Senate could easily turn on Missouri, and if he stays in and gets beaten by arguably the weakest Democrat incumbent in the country, then I think that could have some serious impact. But to your question, any day that you don't get to get your message, every morning there are conference calls, and this is what we're pushing today. And any day that you lose because you have to do something like Todd Akin on the Republican side, or you know something that happens overseas on the or locally on the Democratic side, Vice President Biden with that you want to put you back in chains.
Right.
I mean, anything that takes you out of your game is a bad day, because like any other event that's going to happen on a date certain, the closer you get, the harder it is to make up those days. And now we're within 10 weeks or 9 weeks.
I want to ask you about Mormonism. We have a guest tomorrow, a fascinating guest, who's the author of Falling in Love with Joseph Smith. She almost converted to Mormonism, and she's written a very thoughtful book about it. Is this issue one that Romney needs to talk more about? It's obviously very important in his life. It's a religion that the American people probably don't know a whole lot about. Is it best, if you were advising him, for him to talk about the importance of his faith, or is it best for him to just leave it alone?
No, I think he's been doing that. I mean, they invited reporters to go to church with him last Sunday, or I guess it was Sunday before last. So it's a big part of part of his family's life, and I think they've been pretty open about it. One of the differences, I mean, I'm old enough to remember John Kennedy, who couldn't be elected because he was Catholic, and
right.
He was going to have to take direction from the Pope, which of course was silly at the time and even more silly now. But I think most Americans understand what the basic tenets of Mormonism, and if they don't, we have you can Google it and kind of get a pretty big dose of it on a plane ride or a train ride. So I don't think it's a big issue. There are some people that won't vote for him because of it. Some people who are Mormons that will vote for him because he's a Mormon too. So, my guess is that will about balance out.
Mm-hmm. Who are you most excited to hear this week?
Oh, I think Ryan is the guy that I want to pay the closest attention to. I suspect I know about what he'll say. He will carry, the budget message, but I'm very eager to see what happens when I want to see the reaction among the delegates. I was on the floor 4 years ago when Sarah Palin gave her speech, and she wrote. I mean, for all the other stuff that went on, she just blew the roof off the convention in Minnesota. I don't think. Ryan is, is that fiery an orator, although we know that he's a pretty good speaker. But I'll be very interested to watch the reaction of the delegates, because that will have a big impact on the what appears to be growing intensity about the Republican ticket that he has certainly contributed to.
Mm-hmm. And finally, my question is about Ryan before we let you go. And I know you have a busy day. Those who are critics of Ryan, the New York Times today in an editorial said that he is an emblem of the Republican tack to the far right. You've been involved in Republican politics at a high level for a long time. Is there a tack to the far right? Is he emblematic of that?
No, but I think what it does do is it proves the public editor's case from yesterday that the New York Times is the entire paper is completely overtaken by the progressive views of the newsroom. He may be far to the right for New York City and the Upper West Side, but I think for most Americans, as they grow to know more of him, they've seen him already. I mean, I don't think he scares anybody. Actually, people like him, and the advantage that he has actually is because he's a member of Congress, and they run constantly. They have to be reelected every 2 years. He's perfectly comfortable around people, unlike, frankly, both Obama and Romney, who are not terribly comfortable walking through crowds or kind of shaking hands and chatting. And so is Biden's good at it too. But I think that the issues that the Ryan budget, which, you know, probably three people in the world have read, and I'm not one of them. But the grand answer is there's a plan. It doesn't have to be the plan, but a plan is better than no plan, which is what we've gotten out of the Democrats.
Thank you so much. Have a rip-roaring great time in Tampa.
Thank you. I'll say hi to the Wisconsin delegation for you.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. Rich Galen, Republican strategist and columnist. You can find his thoughts on Mullings.com. That's a good name for a blog, isn't it? Mullings.com. John McCormick joining us momentarily, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. It's all things political, and we focus, of course, on the Republican National Convention because they'll get called to order and then start serious work tomorrow in Tampa, Florida. More phone calls in a moment as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. Next hour, we'll be joined by Rick Hassan, who's a professor of law and political science at the University of California, Irvine. He has a book, The Voting Wars, From Florida 2000 to the Next Election Meltdown. John McCormick is our guest now, staff writer from the Weekly Standard. Our number is 800-486-8655, and I promise we'll get to all of your phone calls, those of you who are on hold during the time that we are with John McCormick. Hello, John. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, great for having me.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. What's the mission? What's the task of the Republican National Convention? What do they have to do to persuade Republicans to really turn out in massive numbers in November and independents to give them a serious thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two pretty simple goals, not necessarily easy goals, but simple goals that Republicans aim to achieve at this convention. And one is to just introduce Mitt Romney to the public. You know, there are plenty of Americans who really haven't seen him ever give a speech. Everything they know about him is from TV ads or what they've heard from friends or maybe read in the newspaper. So this is really the first opportunity for Romney to really introduce himself, to have his wife be introduced to Americans in their own living rooms. So people obviously want to feel comfortable. They want to feel comfortable with someone's ready to lead this nation, and I think that they're hoping to do that to humanize Romney, to tell a little bit about his life story, some of the altruistic things that he's done. And the second thing is obviously they have to present an agenda, and it can't just be Obama's, you know, not been great, the economy's not good. They have to talk about actually what they're going to do. They have to provide some sort of a forward-looking agenda. And I think that with the selection of Paul Ryan, they really have given the indication that they understand this is a big election, that this is an important moment in this country, and we kind of have a choice between which direction we're going to take in terms of the future of the country related to the debt and deficits, and whether we're going to go more towards European-style, much bigger federal government, or whether we're going to kind of be able to rein in our debt and get back to where we've historically been.
Hmm. And is that the importance of the Ryan selection, that it has primarily to do with the debt and the deficit?
I mean, I think that's very important. I think that's I think that Ryan brings a lot of things to the table, but I think that is a big signal. I think that I think that Romney picked Ryan because he thinks, I've personally thought this too, that he's probably the best person to actually be president should that need arise, which is the most important reason to pick someone as a vice president. But also he does, he carries a lot of stuff. He's a good retail politician. He's from Wisconsin. He's got a serious plan that President Obama's even said this is a serious plan. You can't ignore this. President Obama actually elevated Ryan because he sort of thought that all this talk about Medicare reform would scare the heck out of people, and I don't think we've really seen that so far. Now maybe after hundreds of millions of dollars of TV ads by both sides in the fall, maybe people change their minds. But right now, I think it's really kind of energized the Republican Party and made independents who are really concerned about this debt and deficits. You know, so many people are concerned about, everyone's concerned about unemployment, but for people who already have jobs, you know, they've got to be concerned about, well, could things get even worse? Is there a debt crisis around the corner? And for people who do believe that, and I'm one of them, I do believe that if we don't do something, you know, significant in the next few years, we're going to be in a world of hurt, that someone like Ryan really does give you kind of confidence and optimism about what a Romney administration would actually do.
Mm-hmm. And those TV ads, I mean, shame on the American people if what you say is true, that a large percentage, I don't know how many people, will be introduced to Mitt Romney by TV ads, or that's what their introduction has been so far. Shame on the American people if that's how we're meeting our candidates.
Yeah, it'd be nicer if everyone just sort of was able to read, you know,
yes,
comparison side by side. I think the internet's been really helpful with that, you know, to kind of both sides can get there. You can read exactly what the campaigns are saying, what, you know, mainstream publications are reporting on these candidates, what conservative-leaning publications like my own or liberal-leaning publications out there are saying. And I think that there's really a wealth of information out there. If people are interested, they can go find it.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Jamie in Valley Junction. Hi.
Morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I just, I know the talk on the Republican side is we got to get the debt under control, and, you know, whatever Bush did is in the past. But I know Romney's talking about adjusting tax rates down, and there'll be some kind of tax loopholes or tax breaks that'll be eliminated. And when I go into the voting booth, I'd kind of like to know what I'm voting for. So do you think there'll be any talk of any detail? You know, will it be the mortgage interest deduction? Will it be the employer's portion of the health insurance premium deduction? Do you think they're going to get any detail at the convention, or will we have to wait till after? Or are they going to discuss it at all? And I'll take my answer off there.
All right. Thanks, Jamie.
Well, that's a very, very excellent question. So what Ryan did is, you know, as a budget chairman, he wrote this broad document. Think of it as a blueprint for where they want to go. He's not actually in charge of the committee that writes tax policy, so he couldn't overstep his bounds and actually say this is exactly how we're going to get here. And so what the tax reform they're proposing is, we're going to lower the rates for everybody, but we're also going to close loopholes. Now, there have been some claims by the Democrats that it's going to end up being a net tax increase for the middle class. Romney and Ryan say, no, that's completely not true. We're going to take these deductions from the upper brackets primarily. We're going to make sure that the upper brackets are not paying less tax than they've already been paying, because we're going to, you know, while we lower the rates, we're going to take away their deductions. So I think what you'd see happening, and Ryan's already discussed this, is you're going to see some of the deductions, exemptions capped. So, and they haven't been specific. Again, you know, with something like the mortgage interest deduction, you could probably imagine, you know, mortgage interest deduction on homes up to $300,000, $400,000. I don't know the exact number, but I would imagine something like that might happen if they get this through. Ryan also has plenty of experience with this issue, where getting specific on this issue really brings out all the special interests, and you kind of have to do a comprehensive package and bring that together at the end. So I do think it's a little bit of a problem for them that they don't have the specifics on this. You know, counterintuitively, he's better on Medicare because he's really laid out the specifics. You know, he can say to people, no one under 55 is going to be hurt. This is how it's going to work with this mechanism. It actually costs the same amount. You know, we're going to put a cap in there that's the exact same cap as President Obama. So he's, by being able to be specific on Medicare, I think they can defend themselves much more ably. Whereas with the tax issue, as the caller mentioned, we don't have the specifics on which deductions, which loopholes. You just had a pledge from Ryan and Romney, and Ryan's obviously very smart. He's been thinking about this stuff for over a dozen years, and I think he knows what he'd like to do. It's just a question of, you know, what the makeup of Congress is and whether he can get that package through. So I think it makes sense. I mean, even President Obama has said that some sort of tax reform along these lines for businesses, for the corporations, would be smart, because we've got so many corporations like GE paying $0 in taxes. Because they've, you know, been so good at utilizing these things. And an example Ryan will give is, you've got UPS over there paying like 30% in taxes. So you really want to bring all these in alignment to be more competitive and fairer.
You know the Democrats are going to press Governor Romney for more release of his tax records.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to release more?
I don't think so. I mean, should he? I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I could see it, you know, just in terms of transparency, you might want to get that out there. And we're all left speculating what the problem is. There was just some focus group done yesterday down here, and they said, well, do you think he's hiding anything? Do you think they broke the law? And everybody in the focus group, these are, you know, independents or undecideds. No, they don't think that. But, you know, we probably should do it just to show it. I would imagine, you know, the reason they probably haven't, this is just pure speculation again, but the economy took a dive in 2008, 2009, and those are years where, you know, if you had huge business losses, you probably didn't pay a whole bunch in taxes. So I'm guessing they just don't want headlines saying, you know, Mitt Romney paid a 9% tax rate, you know, in this year or something like that. But again, that's pure speculation.
John McCormick is our guest, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. It's All Things Political. We're talking about on the Ideas Network with our emphasis today, of course, on the Republican National Convention, Willem and Colfax. Hi.
Hi. I just recently read that Governor Romney has come out with his what's called Energy Freedom by 2020, in which he said he aggressively wants to expand offshore drilling on coastal United States, including the Federal Alaska Wildlife Reserve, and then he claims that by 2020, the United States will realize a goal of energy independence. That means that all the energy that North America uses will be produced in North America. And either this is very naive on his part, because the energy offshore drilling is done through leasing to private multinational corporations who then put the oil on the world market, and the price is determined by world market and OPEC, and OPEC has already said that if the United States increases their oil production, they'll cut back on their oil production. So I think it's either very manipulative or very naive for him to make this kind of promise, and also to realize what this most climatologists in the world say, that CO2 release in the climate is in the atmosphere is responsible for increased global warming and climate change. And so to increase that, and then at the same time make some sort of claim for being having a moral responsibility to our future is it seems very inconsistent to me.
John,
You know, I honestly haven't taken a close look at his energy policy plans. I would imagine that's an overstatement if he did say a complete 100% energy independence. I think you know, what I've been hearing, the argument is that it'll bring us closer towards energy independence, will help bring down prices a little bit. But I think the bigger thing, even than offshore, is really we've seen some advances with, you know, fracking for I mean, the shale oil. So I think that there really is some opportunity. I haven't read enough on, you know, the environmental cost of doing that, but that does seem like it's there's a bigger opportunity to do that. But yeah, I would just generally say that I don't think anyone expects us to be completely 100% energy independent in just 10 years. So it would be an overstatement if that's what he's saying, but I'm not sure that's what he's saying.
Thank you, Willem. Mary in Lake Geneva, hi.
Hi, I am undecided female voter, and my big problem with Romney right now, I want him to define what pro-life is. I am pro-life, I'm against abortion, but I am for the morning after pill because it is not a human being, and I'm for contraceptive. And I'll take your answer.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that Mitt Romney has never, you know, he's never opposed, no one's in favor of outlawing contraception. You know, that whole question is whether or not all employers are forced to provide contraception as a benefit, you know, and I've kind of likened this to saying, you know, the Obama campaign says that Mitt Romney would allow employers to deny their employees access to contraception. And that's kind of like saying Obama and Romney both support allowing employers to deny their employees access to food. You know, I think if we were making that argument, that would be absurd. But the point is that Mitt Romney and both Barack Obama currently let employers provide people with wages, then they can go out in the market and purchase their own food. And for some reason, the Obama campaign thinks it's a good issue. That, I mean, I understand there's also, they think it's good to have, you know, these preventive services completely free of charge for people. But you do run into the problem where you've got some people, you know, they're Catholic, not even Mother Teresa's nuns would have qualified for the religious exemption that President Obama has in place. And I think we can all recognize that, you know, Mother Teresa's nuns shouldn't have to be providing a product which they find contrary to their morals or values.
Let's try to get one more call in, if we can do that. Ray in Madison. Hi, Ray. Need to make it short.
Yes, I hear all these discussions on the budget, and they usually fail to mention military, or they slip right by it by just focusing on the Pentagon budget, which is only a fraction of the total. The military budget is over $1 trillion a year.
All right, we need to ask, should that be looked at, John?
You know, I think that the defense is kind of the primary purpose. I think that we're not calling for great expansions, but we should keep the budget where we want. We don't want other countries to grow more powerful than us in military strength, because American power has been one of the, you know, greatest forces for freedom in the world. So I think that if you look at the cost explosion, it's these entitlement programs, because we're having 100% increase in Medicare beneficiaries, but we're only having a 17% increase in people paying into the system.
Thank you, Ray, for the call. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
John McCormick, staff writer for the Weekly Standard. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for producing this very interesting hour. We'll continue after the news.